Welcome to Transistor Radio. I'm John from Asianometry, and I'm here with our two co-hosts.
It's Doug from Fabricate Knowledge.
And Dylan from Semi-Analysis. Take us away, Mr. EUV.
Oh my gosh. We have a collection of topics for you today, and it's going to be very exciting because some of this will actually require me to talk. We're kicking off today with High-NA EUV. What do you want to say about it? Dylan, Dylan, anything you want to think about? It's supposed to be the new hot thing. Is it really? But Dylan, you have an interesting piece. You want to talk about it?
John, come on. You've literally spoken about UV more than any of us, at least in the public sector. So explain what it is.
Yeah, let's make John go. I was going to ask about your new video about the acceleration stage thing. Anyways, continue.
High-NA EUV is like the next version of EUV. So it follows Rayleigh's formula, Rayleigh's formula, where we're going to raise NA because we can't basically, which means bigger lenses, bigger mirrors, everything's going to be bigger, except the depth of focus is going to be a lot smaller. But it's got a lot of technical problems. It's going to be a $400 million machine, or ASML is going to try to sell it as a $400 million machine. And
they've sold 10 for that much.
And I was about to say that, yeah. And most of those buyers have been Intel. I think Samsung bought a couple. And there's one company who hasn't, which everyone's been noticing. And yeah, it's a very interesting. Huh?
Who is it? Sorry, I'm being sarcastic.
I think
it's a little company town.
Global Foundries.
It's a little.
I think they've bought one or two, right?
No, TSMC. They've not bought any. No, TSMC has not bought any.
No, they've bought one. They've bought one for sure because ASML's talked about the number of customers who have bought them. So they've bought at least one.
They've not seen any masks printed for it. So if
maybe
not
in the
seen
order
any
book?
Masks printed for it. It's not delivered.
Maybe
they're not using it.
Printed. No one's.
There isn't even high NA masks.
Tools.
Yeah, I don't think they have the
they're running
that,
research yeah. masks. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Everyone's running research masks.
Yeah. I'll explain later. I can explain later.
Okay.
But yes, okay. Maybe they bought one.
Okay, so maybe high level, for people who do not understand, EUV is the latest, greatest thing in lithography. Lithography is the process of stamping a pattern onto a wafer using what's called a mask. Now they're
whoa. Stamping.
Sorry, not stamping. Okay,
not stamping. Projecting.
Projecting. Sorry. Using.
Where are the cannon shells
okay,
at?
Okay.
God damn
okay,
it.
Okay. Sorry. Oh my God. We're not even going to talk about that. My bad. That was a real Freudian show. But anyways, EUV is really cool because it has this really small ray of light. It's much smaller than normal light. It's super duper fancy. Mega ultra expensive. One of the reasons why Intel lost, I don't know, just trying to make sure people who have no context know what EUV is. I think that should be good enough. But high NA,
I feel
really
like
expensive.
They previously know EUV.
If you're on Transistor Radio.
If you're watching Transistor Radio and you don't know what EUV is, slap yourself,
yeah, okay.
Please. Unless John's mother is watching, because I know she does tune in from time to time.
We appreciate
it. She does, Mom. Sorry about all the F words.
Okay,
Doug, you got some questions for you for
yeah.
Dylan, and maybe me.
So Dylan, you recently did a post. This post was really spicy because you pretty much proved out that high NA kind of extremely expensive and not worth it. Do you want to walk us through the high level overview and why high NA is going to be such a flop?
Sure. So part of our research business, we had someone else join us. So beyond the Substack, right, our general research business, we had someone join us. His name's Jeff from ASML. And, you know, the first sort of thing we had him start working on was this ASML dilemma, right, which is that high-NA EUV is actually just worse than low-NA EUV multi-patterning, right, in literally every way. Right, so multi-patterning is sort of how people continue to scale with the same lithography tool, right? Rather than needing a new lithography tool that can print smaller, you use multiple passes of the older one, and that gets you to same pitch, right? And so in general, that worked, But it had challenges, right? So at 7 nanometer, right, people used DUV at first, but then everyone transitioned to EUV except for Intel, right? And Intel tried to push a little too far, a little too fast. And that meant that EUV tools were hard to, you know, kind of all this multi-patterning led to yield challenges, right? EUV greatly simplified the process, right? It made it cheaper. It made it faster. It made it simpler so you had better yield. But with high-NA EUV, the same does not apply, right? With regular EUV, doing multi-patterning is actually better, right? And this is because of a thing, a little old thing called DOS, right? So DOS, John, what is DOS?
It's like the, if I recall correctly, it's like how much EUV light gets put onto a single exposure of a wafer.
Yeah, basically it's how long, right? So like the EUV tools, like shooting all these laser beams, right? You got these laser beams in simplistic terms. It's not a laser beam. It's a laser beam hitting a droplet of tin and then creating a lot of light. But that light is hitting the wafer,
twice,
right? And
hitting a droplet of tin twice. Expose.
Okay, Mr. UV.
Oh yeah, it is hitting.
Yes, it has to plasmify it, and then the second one hits it. Okay, Mr. EUV,
yeah.
We get it. I'm just kidding. Keep talking, John.
Mr. Pedant. No, I'm just kidding. So with high-NA EUV or with EUV in general, right? The big challenge has been dose, right? Which is how long you're exposing each reticle, right? So a reticle can contain either one chip that's 800 millimeters squared, like say an NVIDIA GPU or a Broadcom network ASIC, or it can expose many chips, right? But that fit in within that 800 millimeters squared roughly, right? 854 millimeters squared. And as you expose each chip, if you will, right, each reticle, you have to blast light at it for a certain amount of time, right? And dose is how long you're doing that, right? And so with EUV is a big challenge, right? Because due to all the mirrors, each mirror you're losing light, you end up with, from the point of generation all the way down to the wafer, only 2% of the photons are actually making it there, right? And then when you compare that to DUV, the number of photons hitting the wafer is significantly less, right? Like significantly less. And so you have all these problems with actually getting the feature that you want printed. You have this problem called stochastics, right? Which is basically random noise. Because not enough is hitting the wafer, there's a significant amount of noise that's occurring, right? Basically, there's 1/14th as many photons hitting it with EUV versus prior technologies such as argon fluoride immersion lithography, right? And so, you know, you have to greatly increase the dose, i.e. the amount of time each reticle is exposed. With EUV, right, ASML likes to advertise 30 millijoules of dose, right? That's the metric. In the past, they actually advertised 20 millijoules, but those are nonsense numbers, right? When you look at production, people are using 60 to 100. Or more even in the case, right? In some cases, right? So if you look at anyone's research, iMac or IBM research, these guys are using over 100, right? It's only, you know, the rumors are that TSMC has been able to get it down to 60, but that's still twice as much dose as what ASML kind of advertises. And so when you look at the throughput of these tools and you say, hey, well, what's the throughput look like? Your wafers per hour number is way lower than what ASML quotes, which is fine because it's still better, still cheaper, still lets you get better resolution. The thing is, when you switch over to high-NA EUV, that problem is exacerbated, right? You have huge dose, especially because of the, the change to the reticle where it's half the field. You know, there's also problems with regards to, hey, well, what if I do multi-patterning with EUV, right? So you have this problem of like, hey, I could use this new $400 million tool, but I could use a really, really high dose, or I can use EUV. And instead of printing like these, say, 36 nanometer pitches or 32 nanometer pitches with a single pass of EUV, now we're trying to go down below, you know, it's down to like 22 nanometer. I can't print 22 nanometer in a single pass, right? A pitch of 22 nanometer. So now I do multi-patterning, right? So TSMC's 5 nanometer with a 28 nanometer M0 pitch actually uses multi-patterning, right? It uses two EUV passes to achieve 28 nanometer, right? Theoretically, you can achieve it, right? There's plenty of research that as people printing 28 nanometer lines and holes and et cetera. But the problem is that you have to have such a high dose, it ends up, hey, actually TSMC figured out, well, if I use multi-patterning with EUV, I can actually use a much, much lower dose. And so I can actually have that tool go through more wafers, even though it has to go through two passes, right, versus one, right? So I can have more throughput. And so the question is, what happens with high NA EUV? Well, it turns out it's still more effective to do two passes of single patterning with EUV than it is to do a single pass of high NA EUV. It's faster, it's cheaper, right? Because it's a cheaper tool that operates faster. So you end up going through more wafers an hour, more than two times as many wafers an hour, which lets you do the multi-patterning at still faster, cheaper speeds. And then also the other thing is multi-patterning EUV can get down to a lower pitch than regular high NA EUV. So you've got this double whammy of like, oh wow, there's like really no point in using high NA EUV versus regular EUV, except when you start getting to pitches so low that you need to go triple patterning on EUV, right? That's where it finally makes sense to use high NA EUV.
Which is in 2030. So pretty much no high NA EUV, high NA until the end of this decade.
Yeah,
they're going to still use it. Intel's going to try to use it.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll try to.
Yeah, I mean, if you've bought the tools, it's kind of sunk cost, right? Like, you might as well use it now.
Yeah, and maybe you figure out how to do this, or maybe Intel is going to rush ahead with the ten.
How many they bought? Six, yeah, seven,
like that. I think Intel bought six on the basis that they are like overcompensating for how bad they fucked up EUV. They're like, we can't miss high NA.
If you listen to the last episode, right, where we talked about automotive, and John mentioned he was going to get a Prius, and Doug says he's going to get a RAV4 electric, and meanwhile I'm here talking about getting an F-150, right? This is the same thing as what Intel's doing. We're overcompensating here.
Oh, that was a really good delivery. Holy crap. Dylan, when did you get this funny, man? Oh, brother.
Whoa, come on.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. So anyways, Intel's overcompensating. High NA kind of sucks in terms of the cost. I think it's really interesting because I think the investor conversation or people who talk about ASML is just like, oh, the magical UV laser machine is going to take over the world. And it's like, no, it can't keep getting more expensive and people like, you know, I think both Dylan and I have been holding on to this for a long time where it's like we're past peak EUV intensity and like the EUV story is like yesterday's news. That's just me. It's a cool laser though.
I mean, it's like in the end, it's like what Intel just passes the wafer cost on to the customers, right?
Yeah.
Or they eat it themselves. They have this big PC monopoly they can still sit on, kind of monopoly. And then they can basically just say, oh, you know, stuff from the design side will subsidize the manufacturing side.
Yeah.
I mean, to be clear, right, we're talking about like, hey, multi-patterning EUV versus, single-patterning high NA EUV is like 20% more expensive, right? And so this is something that like Intel will eat the cost on, right? Because they've ordered them, right? They've decided that this is the better path. Whereas TSMC and Samsung have not ordered a ton of tools, right? They've ordered one in the case of TSMC and a few in the case of Samsung, right? And so we don't know which way Samsung goes yet. Very likely they could just go crazy with it again, just like they were the first to go crazy with EUV. They could go crazy with high NA EUV too, like Intel. But it seems like TSMC is being very conservative. And in fact, ASML is visiting TSMC right now and probably trying to convince them to buy a high NA EUV because they have it, right? They're actually literally, I think Peter Winkle is literally in, is literally in Taiwan right now, the CEO.
The new CEO.
Trying to convince them. The new CEO, yeah.
Think they'll get it?
Yeah.
Think they'll do it?
I think they're dumb not to buy a few. Right, I think they're really dumb to base an entire process node on the most critical pitches being made by EUV. Right, so it's kind of a tale of two stories. Right, like yes, you should buy a couple, Because look, by the way, right? Like 2 nanometer, right? Intel's 2 nanometer, 18A, 20A. They initially were going to do high NA there, but then they decided against it because it was not going to intercept with the timelines that ASML had, right? TSMC's 2 nanometer, likewise, doesn't really intercept, right? The first EUV tools shipped this year, right? And that's not anywhere near enough time to have a process node that goes into mass production in 2025, right? Like TSMC's 2 nanometer, Intel's 18A, 20A, right? You know, those process nodes can't hit it, right? So then the next process node, it's either, hey, when I do a 2 nanometer plus, or like, you know, kind of 18A is a 2 nanometer plus, but like, you know, maybe like a 16A or, you know, things like that, right? TSMC confirmed at the Applied Materials event I was at just a handful of weeks ago that they're calling 1.4 nanometer A14. Right, so A14 or what Intel calls 14A, or what you might think of as 1.4 nanometer, that's the next node that it could possibly be done on, right? And so at that stage, you have to make the determination in probably 2025. You know, when you've got your first tool, hey, do I buy a bunch of high NA, or do I stick with regular EUV, right? And I think
is it that, really like, you know, an economic kind of question?
I think it's an economic question, yeah. I mean, it's obviously feature size, but double patterning EUV is capable of better feature size than single patterning EUV, high NA, right? You know, there's some edge placement error issues, but in general, that's true, right? So even then, at 1.4 nanometer, A14, 14A, God, I hate this. It was much nicer when everyone just lied about process nodes and they were all, you know, 1.4 nanometer, 7 nanometer.
I really,
right?
now
yeah, but the Hacker News people would come after us and the Redditors, like, unacceptable.
Oh, yeah, like every thread. Oh, but it's not.
Anyways, I was going to say, guys, because after 14, then we had like a few more years. But guys, the next unit is a Fermi, and that just doesn't sound cool to me. Angstrom sounds cool. Fermi doesn't sound cool. That's my...
Well, yeah, I think like 20A, 18A, 7A...
F12 sounds cool.
Has a long reign to go, right? Like, especially if the node mark... If Samsung doesn't get hold of the narrative, right, and starts calling every little plus another A, I think that... You know, the A's will last a long time, right? It'll last until
the 2040s.
Probably end of next decade.
Yeah, and
right?
2040s. But I'm just saying, 2050s, man. Yeah, I gotta say, F14 sounds cool. Never mind, I take it back.
I mean, like, I remember there was an article that, like, it took the industry. I came across this article while researching another video, which, gosh, I wish I remember that article. But it's like, it was talked about the angst that it took for this industry to switch from micron, so it was like 0.13 micron to 130 nanometer, and it took forever for them to switch it over, and it was like a real pain because to get everyone to talk about it. I expect it would be much much similar here, and I wish that sort of that's
oh,
the
yeah,
sort of drama
right,
that should be on Asia Geometry.
There were multiple micron video sub-zero micron process nodes, huh?
Yeah, I mean, one of the companies,
yeah, 0.13 micron,
if
yeah.
Micron would be called nanometer.
Yeah, dude, this is a video for you. The angst for angstroms, and then the video is just about the micron transition, micron to nanometer.
Not even the micron, literally just the name.
Okay, let's move on from high NA. I think the thing that we want to talk about next was Synopsys.
Real quick, sorry. The reason this matters is because ASML's goals are to ship 20 high NA EUV tools in 2028, and I just don't think that's possible. I just don't think they have the demand. I think that they will ship high NA EUV tools. I think TSMC will buy every new high NA EUV tool until they decide to put into a node in production, maybe in the 29 or 30 range, right? I think Intel will probably continue to buy high NA EUV tools, but they can't satisfy that demand. And Samsung is somewhere in the middle, who knows? But there's not enough demand for 20 times 400 million, right? Sorry.
Not a believer in the WFE Giga Chad thesis.
They just gotta sell more DUVs to China. Then I guess that's the only way.
Yeah,
to
that's
fix
the only way. The only way
hole.
To fix it. No, see, you just don't believe in 1 trillion WFE. We're talking about 100 billion. No. Soon we're gonna make the moon into the next fab. The whole Look, world's resources will be used to create cell tools to the semiconductor companies to then turn sand into chips. A chip in every...
I went to this... I was at an AI conference called ICML in Hawaii. And there was an event on the beach called AI Safety on the Beach, right? They had a little bonfire on the beach and whatever. I showed up with one of my friends who does care about safety, and I care about safety to some extent, ostensibly. Like, but this is a beach. Just think of all the people that think that, like, AI safety is, like, a really big issue, right? As in, like, we're going to build the machine god, and the machine god is going to kill us all, right? Like, that is, like, straight up, like, what everyone on this beach thinks, right? And so when I show up, I'm like, you know, I'm talking to people, whatever. People are like, oh, so yeah, what do you do, right? Like, at some point in the conversation, obviously everyone asks, like, what do you do? What do you work on? And I'm like, oh, I work in the semiconductor industry. And like, oh, so what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm just curious what the people who want to hurt my industry want. Just to troll people. But the dream of a Matryoshka brain, right, where every resource is turned into a compute power is real. And that means applied materials, LAM research, ASML, etc., employees are the last ones to get killed by an AGI. That's for sure. So if you're worried about AI safety, go get a chemistry PhD, a physics PhD, and go work for one of these
companies. So we, just so you know, a longstanding goal of all of ours is getting people inspired to join the industry. And previously, we came with the carrot. Now we're coming with the stick. If you...
Right, the carrot was that, like,
it's the cool thing to do.
I guess it's all stick,
yeah.
Right?
The carrot thing is like, look, man, we tricked the sand into thinking we organize all of our information by manipulating atoms through silicon. Pretty cool. But the stick is that the AGI's last helpers will be you, and you could be that person. So that sounds great, man. That's our new slogan. Instead of the carrot, instead of the charm offensive, we're going to go wolf warrior on them. And we're going to be like, you have to work in these fabs or AGI will kill you. So
you're first on the, you'll be first dumped out into
space. AI is going to be far more capable of writing some code a lot longer than it's going to be able of to design and build the next generation etch equipment.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, wow. Might be able to design it pretty well, but someone still need to go make the chips.
Yeah.
No, dude, problem is AI... Like all of our AI is best, it trains. What does it train on? It trains on stuff that's accessible. The great thing is, because semiconductors are so full of 50-plus-year-olds with beards, right? Like old dudes, it's not all digitized. It's so how is it going to train?
There's no information. Wow. We got him. We got him, guys. Well, actually, and this is our science fiction fantasy book in the future, is that actually... in the future, semiconductor humans stay alive because they don't write down any of the information. It's all spoken by hand to mouth to mouth. Otherwise, they'll be eaten by the AGI. Will just be like, you're gone. It's like no. We have to keep the memory alive. So
all right, Orson Scott Card.
But this is where it goes back to my AI girlfriend hypothesis, right? No. This is where it goes back to the AI girlfriend hypothesis.
No.
Where the AGI has to trick,
we're not doing this
has
again.
To trick
Dylan,
the semiconductor
stop.
Engineers. No, it has to trick the semiconductor engineers into believing in its AI girlfriend and explaining, yeah, baby, today I was just doing this formula on etch rate of cryo etch, and you know, that's how we make memory denser. And that's how the AGI learns how to make equipment.
Let's move on. We're going to move on here to we're going to stifle the AI girlfriend, and we're going to move on to Cadence. No, Synopsys, sorry. Synopsys and Ansys. Because this is a big piece of news that just came out.
I've been getting a lot of emails about this. Why does this matter? Like, why do people think I know this? Because just because I did a video about computational lithography, I get all the emails saying, like, I need to do videos about Ansys. What's this about?
So... Ansys, similar to Cadence, and actually, it's been a freaking long time. I'm, like, literally pulling up their website right now. They do, like, computational simulation for, like, physics and stuff. So it's not quite semiconductors, but dang is it sort of close. And, for example, so there is a little bit of strategic logic here. And you would know if you were in Dylan and I's Discord, because there's actually a really good conversation about it in the Discord. Like, truly, like, I'm not even chilling here. A few of the members talked about how Ansys has a few specific physics modeling capabilities that are much better than Cadence's and essentially are the leaders. They actually... even showed up in the...
And Synopsys is the third place player in those
markets,
just to be
and
clear.
So Synopsys... but Synopsys is, like, way bigger than Ansys. So... and also, just, like, listen to their names. Ansys, Synopsys, like, come on. This is a merger that was always going to happen.
So when they merge, right? When they merge, is the company's name just going to be?
No, it's going to be Synopsys.
Synapsys. Anyways,
the new use cases of their modeling of physics, they happen to have some pretty good ones that are very specific for semiconductors. Now the problem is the vast majority of their business has nothing to do with semiconductors. So and we're going to go through the investor feedback here. Like, there is actual real strategic reasons why this makes sense. Now, it really is like buying the entire company for 5% of the company. If you're like, you know, the true Synopsys guys here, you could probably make the math work, mostly just because Synopsys' stock is so expensive. And so if it's an all-stock deal, you can make the math work. But a lot of people are really pissed because Synopsys is kind of like a cleaner story than Cadence to a certain extent because, hey, they're you know, Cadence and Synopsys, two big EDA players. We're not going to explain what EDA is, but essentially Synopsys also has this IP business, which has actually been kind of crushing it for the last few years. And Synopsys' execution has been like pretty solid for the last 3 to 5 years. And now the new CEO, and this is where like the bankers win, if that makes sense. New CEO, he was previously the COO, and the bankers are in his ear and it's like, you can make a mark on this company. And how you can make a mark is you can buy Ansys for I don't even know how many billion dollars, but like billions of dollars with a crazy premium. And investors hate it. Like, this is probably the most universally reviled deal I've seen in quite some time. So, yeah, that's the story. I think that it does make a little bit more strategic sense than you'd think. There are some real pockets of simulation IP in there that are really good for semiconductors, but it really is like the vast minority of the business, and that's the reason why I think investors are really pissed. So, yeah, could be a good thing. Could be a bad thing. Who knows? We'll tell you on Transistor Radio.
Any Dylan, other takes? What do you think?
That was so smooth. We'll tell you. It's like, are we going to do an ASMR episode one day? And the EUV was hitting the photons.
Scream about ASMR AI girlfriends. That'll be the April Fool's episode.
I think Doug covered it really well. Because I think Doug's initial take was like, pretty negative. I think he's still pretty negative, right? Is that fair to say?
So, yeah.
But then the Discord kind of, you know, was really good. There's a couple folks who actually, you know, work in EDA and such are like, hey, like, this makes sense from this perspective.
Yeah, but like, you have to, if you think about it, I still think it's like a little negative, but like, let's say the investor's take is like, how could you stupid dummies?
How could you not just buy back more stock?
Yeah, it's like what there's the no hell? Overlap at all. And it's like, no, guys, there actually is overlap. You guys are like literally like the problem is these like narratives become a little bit of witch hunts, if that makes sense. When people really hate the deal, they're like, you're so fucking stupid. Because to be clear, the average deal is overpaid for. Like, you know, there's a pretty long litany of like academic finance papers, and I would say like on average deals you are overpaid. And so this is probably a good example of they're going to overpay for this one. But that being said, humans are humans, and the CEO is like, you know what? I want to make my mark on this company, and by doing so, I'm going to buy Ansys. So, yeah, kind of a weird thing. And actually, really weird like filings, and this is like in my other genre of obsession. They actually kind of created a giant retention package for Synopsys like days before the deal, kind of implying that Ansys could reverse 180 and end up being the CEO. Now we'll see, but I think the thing is, realistically, probably not. The guy just got promoted, but it's going to be an interesting story. And at a high level, you know, and this is parroting the Discord again, which, by the way, great work in there, guys. Ansys is like a much more friendly company to do business with. So maybe they just take Ansys's business model and go to market, and they steal Synopsys's business, and they just do that. That'd be great. But time will tell.
Next topic. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the last topic you wanted to talk about?
Oh, the last topics were about those fucking bears, dude. They're trying to take over the narrative, right? So these fucking bears are trying to point at these silly little things like TSMC's monthly revenues, like, oh, look, they're down. And it's like, yeah, but they beat guidance. Oh, look, they're down. They're down.
I think I actually have a good one of this, too, for WFE. They're like, how could China revenue? WFE has to be down next year because China is a splurge and it'll never be replicated. ACM, my little weird Chinese semi-cap company, just got it up next year. So, like, I don't know. The bears probably are missing the big picture. The biggest two markets, the biggest market in the world, which is smartphone, has bottomed. The second biggest market in the world, which is PC, has also bottomed. The third biggest market in the world is AI, and that is still going through a hockey stick and will probably be the biggest market in the next 2 years. I don't know. I don't know what else you could want, dude. Like, the AI semiconductor business is the biggest it's ever been. Like, this happened way sooner than we ever thought, right?
There's these, like, a lot of people are buying this narrative that, you know, for example, NVIDIA's already cutting orders, right? There's this narrative. But at the same time, everything that we see in the supply chain, you know, including all the way out to TSMC, NVIDIA's orders at TSMC for packaging capacity and such, right, indicates that NVIDIA, even if maybe they are getting some weakness from their Chinese customers because of the downgraded chips, they are not acting like it, right? They continue to beg for more supply even in Q4, right? So in Q3 of this year, right? So there is no slowdown in their eyes, right? Now, there could be, but if there was, I would be surprised because, you know, NVIDIA is still rationing GPUs I don't know. I was thinking of trying to think of something negative to say. Rationing GPUs
Like a soup kitchen or something. So the GPU ports.
Yeah, that's almost spicy enough, but something even worse.
Jesus.
Something that's more likely to get me canceled. Come on.
Dylan's long-standing quest to get canceled on his own podcast.
Insert cancelable statement. All right.
Okay. Yeah. All in all, man, interesting dynamic. I just think that, yeah, I think... And also, where these rumors are coming from is from the least reliable source in the entire world. And that is probably DigiTimes. DigiTimes is probably...
That's true. The NVIDIA cut. Yeah. That's a
DigiTimes. So,
although I've heard investors tell me this beforehand. So I'm starting... As I've like hung out with more and more Taiwan investors and talked to them more and more, right? I've always talked to a few, but like as I talk to more and more and more of them, I'm starting to understand that the narrative forms, and some of these people just try and feed it to DigiTimes.
Yeah, and DigiTimes will pick up any narrative. That makes a lot of sense. Because the DigiTimes...
It's the shotgun method,
yeah, I
right?
mean, and then they're like, we predicted it. You know, I mean, and they will literally say contradict...
Actually, I don't think DigiTimes is not like promotional in that, like, oh, we have...
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think...
Yeah, well, I think they're just really consistent in terms of, like, they're always giving their... Because, like, when I tell you, they will have... conflicting views within 2 weeks. Pretty amazing. But anyways, that same... And there's also one other aspect in there that I think could also be confusing the hell out of everyone. Some people are saying, hey, our orders are so backlogged here that we are cutting our orders for H100 to shift to B100 because by the time this H100... Like right now, if GPUs are on 52-week back orders, right? Which I think they still are to a certain extent, right? So if you're ordering one in 2024, odds are you're going to get it in 2025. 2025, that's going to be a B100. And so you could be like, oh, hey, there's order cuts happening for the H100 without the context that B100 is going to replace that. So that's, I don't know, there's a lot of confusion. Colette literally just freaking said, hey, we could grow in 2025, which is like such a weird statement. No one knows what they're going to do. But all in all, people need to real...
What's even more badass is last year at the CES investor lunch, everyone had tea.
No, that by the way, the tea was my joke. Okay, that is not true. Yes, the joke.
The martinis
apparently, and this is once again a rumor. Okay, but apparently, allegedly, Colette ordered a round of martinis for everyone at the table. You don't do that. You don't do that if you're about to guide down. Or maybe she is. Who knows? Maybe that's
the investors drunk.
The 10,000 IQ move is like, I will put their guard down by ordering them martinis right as Q2, because historically they usually do it Q3. Q3 will be the quarter, so we'll see. I think both times happened. Q3 was like the traumatic guide down, so we'll see. I don't know. All in all, even if AI turns by the end of the year, smartphone will be strong enough that the entire semiconductor market is going to be just fine. And let's not forget, memory is screaming, ripping, roaring back to life. And HBM is going to be screaming, ripping, roaring back to life, regardless of how AI accelerators do. And I think that that's maybe a little bit... that's a little bit underestimated, I think.
Why isn't it tied to AI accelerators?
Well,
I mean, there's the content growth.
Yeah, I think it's just
content growth. Why is it not tied to AI accelerators?
I just think it's content growth. Like units can go down, but I bet you content growth within AI accelerators outpaces that regardless, right? Like H200...
They're just going to stack a whole bunch of HBMs.
Yeah. Like H200, they're like, it's like the H100, but with more HBM.
Memory.
They're going to sit there and shove as much HBM as they can onto an accelerator. And yeah, the bomb, like as a percentage of bomb, it's still like very fucking hilariously small, but like they're going to be selling more HBM, and HBM is like a surprisingly large market. It's like a $5 billion market, probably turning into 10 to 15 very soon. The entire NAND market is like $30 billion. So if we're talking about in like 3 years from now, HBM could be like a $20 billion market, and we're like, oh shit, that's a whole nother vector of semiconductor growth. And yeah, I just think that like this AI semiconductor thing, yes, there might be some bubble. There might be like some bubbles and some bursting and some tears along the way, but is it going to be larger in 5 years? Almost assuredly so. And I think people need to take note of that. So.
Got it. Great.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Any else?
No, that's it.
You had a question about my video. About ASML.
Oh yeah, no, because I keep seeing it on my homepage of YouTube, and I haven't watched it. And I was like, dude, can you give me the spark notes right now about the stage, the accelerator? Because it's really cool. I just every single time anyone tells me how many G's force goes through the stage, I'm always like, wait, how do they do that?
It's like 20 G's, I think. Long stroke, short stroke motors on top of magnets. They have a really interesting arrangement of magnets to sort of keep it on suspension. They haven't gone to all magnets as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But they went from hydraulics to aerostatic and then to magnetic. Really cool stuff, actually. I'm actually really impressed that the whole thing works. And
yeah.
I had to dig through a lot of papers to find out all of that.
That's pain, really... But. I have a question. How do magnets work? You want to explain that to me?
Magnets? Sorry. How do they work?
How do they work?
I don't know.
That was the meme. I'm sorry. I had to get it in there. I think that's it for today. Magnets, how do they work? We're the great minds of Transistor Radio. Leave you with this unanswerable question.
Shit, man. We don't know how semiconductors work anyways. I mean, it's all black magic.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's
fucking.
Well, okay.
It just works.
This is actually allegedly like an interview question, like way back in the day for Intel PhDs. You'd be like, hey, you just got your PhD in solid state physics or whatever. Tell me how a semiconductor works. And they would like have them like sit there with
to this day, my friend, he I think he joined last year. They still, to anyone joining the manufacturing organization, they like from a research or a yield perspective, or process integration, they tell them to draw a transistor. That is part of the interview.
Yeah, and people fail that, and they still get the job. Crazy enough.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I did a video recently about transistor solid state physics, how the first transistor worked. We don't know. I mean, I didn't know. I read it, and I was just like, nope, I'm not putting this in the video, and just skipped it.
Oh yeah, you're talking about the positive versus negative,
the point contact transistor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
not the alloy ones, but the point contact transistor, not the junction. I'm like, I don't know how this works. This is not my problem. I'm just gonna skip it.
So instead of magnets, how do they work? We leave you with a more important and profound question: transistors, how do they work?
We don't know.
We don't know.
Just assuming. We don't know.
The electrons go in, heat comes out. You can't explain that.
What the?
That's my favorite one, the moon. The tides come in, the tides come out.
Can't explain that. Oh, man. Okay. I think that's it for today.
All right. We're off the rails. Let's go to bed.
Yeah. And also, don't forget to subscribe as a Patreon to John of Asianometry. He deserves to go full time, and you should be giving his money like me and Dylan do, because John is the best of all of us. Let's be real. But he is not a greedy capitalist. He lives in the peaceful, wonderful island nation of Taiwan, to which we wish much prosperity on them. Anyways, guys, this is it for Transistor Radio. This is Doug from Fabricated Knowledge, and
this is Dylan from Semi Analysis.
John from Agenometry.
Our most sovereign of us all. Thank you, John. We can't wait to talk to you again, and until next time. Bye.
Peace.